Thank you, everyone, for coming today. I'm so happy to spend a few minutes here to share some Purim Torah with you as we prepare for this upcoming Yontif. We're on the heels of Parsha Zachar, trying to remember what Amalek did, and we're heading into the Purim. So I'd like to share a perspective about Emuna that I think is revealed through this story, the story of Michiel Amalek and through getting ready for Purim. So again, this is not the only perspective, but a perspective that I think is very critical for this time. So let's begin with Zechiyas HaMalek. We read in Parshas Beshalach, Vayavo HaMalek Vayilachim im Yisrael b'Refidim, that we know HaMalek came and they fought and they struggled with Yisrael and Refidim. Let's skip a couple of psukim here. And says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, very famous but interesting kind of a story that we all know. And it was when Moshe would lift up his hands, he would raise up his hands towards heaven. V'gavar Yisrael, and Yisrael, the Jewish people, would become emboldened and strengthened. And when he would lower his hands, then V'gavar HaMalek, Amalek would have the upper hand, so to speak. And Moshe's hands were very heavy. And his hands became very heavy. He wasn't able to hold them up towards the heavens so that the Gavah Yisrael, the Bnei Yisrael, would be able to rise to the occasion and to be victorious. So he sat down on Evan, and we know Aaron v'Chur, they lifted, they helped hold Moshe Rabbeinu's hands up, so that his hands would remain raised. So an interesting story, rather perplexing. And we know the famous Mishnah, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, asks the following question. Questions the Mishnah, is it true that the hands of Moshe were what accomplished the outcome of the war? Did they destroy Bnei Yisrael's chances of winning the war? Or they're the ones responsible for engaging Bnei Yisrael in this battle that they could accomplish and overcome? Is that true? Is that his hands? His hands accomplished everything? So says the Mishnah, no, rather, that's not it. Rather, it is to, we should understand the following. That as long as the Jewish people were looking heavenwards, then and they subjugated their hearts to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in heaven, so then they would be able to be victorious, then they would become strong and overcome the enemy. But if they didn't look up, if they weren't mishabed their hearts to Hashem, then hayunoflim, we would fall. The Jewish people fell. So that's what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says it wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu's hands that accomplished the victory in the war, or Chalila made us lose the war, but rather it was what they represented. Were we looking up and relying on Hashem and be mishabed our hearts to Hashem, to our Father in heaven? So says the Sfas Emes, I'd like to share with you a very, very beautiful Sfas Emes. So that's this next source. Says the Sfas Emes. We'll go past the bolded letters where it goes down. We'll jump right into the question. The kasha, the Sfas Emes has a very, I think, profound and simple question at the same time. Uma kushya, what on earth was bothering the mission of Yadav Shel Moshe? Is it possible that Moshe's hands accomplished the victory in the war? V'chizeh bilvado solon Yadav Shel Moshe? Are Moshe's hands so simple? We know that Moshe accomplished so many great things with his tefillah, with his hands, with the matzah, the staff that he had. V'chizeh bilvado solon Yadav Shel Moshe v'hem asu kol niflos Hashem v'kriyas yamsuf v'shar nisim. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was able to wrought all these miracles, all the miracles that happened in Yetzias Mitzrayim, where it was the Makos, whether it was the crossing the sea and splitting the sea. Moshe's hands were quite miraculous. Do we think Moshe's hands were a simple thing? Moshe's hands are not simple. So why is it so astounding to us? Why is it so perplexing to us? The Mishnah to say, is it possible that Moshe's hands would have lifted up his hands that Bnei Yisrael would win? If he lowered his hands, they would lose. Why is that so surprising? Moshe did so many miracles. Yes, the answer is yes. He lifted up his hands and we won. And that's the way the miracle was brought about. Okay, so that's the question that Sfas Emes asks. What is bothering the Mishnah that the Mishnah feels it can't be Moshe's hands? Vesu, furthermore, asks the Sfas Emes, That which the Mishnah ends with, that if Moshe Rabbeinu lowered his hands, then Hayunoflim, the Bnei Yisrael would fall. And says the Sas Emes, if you look at the Psukim don't mention Yisrael falling. The Pasuk says the Gavar Amalek Siv, Velona Filas Yisrael. The Pasuk just says when Moshe lowered his hands, then Amalek became strengthened, but not that the Jewish people necessarily fell. Why does the Mishnah, now obviously that seems to be the implications that Bnei Yisrael fell, but why is it the Mishnah directly connects Moshe's hands to Bnei Yisrael falling, as opposed to reflecting what the Pasuk says, which is that, that Amalek just became stronger. Maybe they became stronger and we persevered. So why does the Mishnah say we fall? Okay, I think two very, very insightful questions. Achein nir lefaresh kavanosim b'derech zeh. So says the Sfas Emes in the next paragraph. Therefore, he says, I feel we should explain the Kavanah of the Mishnah in the following fashion. Right? The question that is it possible that everything was relying on Moshe Rabbeinu? The outcome of the war was all within Moshe Rabbeinu's hands, literally. Shiyad of Osos Oshovros, that it was hands that make the war or destroy the war. Dimkein. If that were the case, pshita delohia maniach yadav. If that's true, that if it all rested on Moshe Rabbeinu's hands, it is so obvious Moshe Rabbeinu would never, ever put his hand down, regardless of how difficult it might have been for him to keep his hands up. He knew the outcome of war, the lives of the Jewish people rested on his hands. So of course he's going to keep them lifted up towards the heaven. Umaykasha yaniach Moshe. So why does the pasuk say when Moshe lowered his hands? The Gavar Amalek and the Melech became strong. Moshe Rabbeinu knows it's all up to him, right? We can accomplish amazing things if we have the willpower. Moshe Rabbeinu, who loved Klal Yisrael so, so deeply, obviously had the willpower to keep his hands up. So therefore, that bothered the Mishnah. Lachein Tertzu. So the Mishnah said it can't be that it was all relying on Moshe because he wouldn't put his hands down. So the Mishnah answers, Ki Yadar Shel Moshe Misgabim Kishibnei Yisrael Mistakim Klapim Mala. What it means is as follows. That Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were like the barometer for our own, for Klal Yisrael's state, religious and emunah state of being. That when Bnei Yisrael looked upwards towards the heavens and we relied on Hashem and we gave over our hearts to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Moshe Rabbeinu's hands lifted. He was able to bring them up. But if we ourselves weakened in our amuna, Bnei Yisrael, that were engaging in this epic battle with Amalek, when their amuna waned, when their amuna weakened, then Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the koach, didn't have the strength to keep his hands up. So his hands reflected. They were an indication to us, those of us who were fighting the battle, Klal Yisrael, were fighting and waging the war at the Amalek. We were able to tell how well were we doing with our emunah and Hashem by looking at Moshe Rabbeinu's hands. Let's just skip down in the next paragraph. We don't have time to read it all through, but I definitely encourage you to read the whole piece. But if we go down in that second, the next paragraph towards the bottom, so he says as follows, the second to last line. In that next paragraph, the kam ein rachel klefarish pasuk atmo kein. So it says the Sfas Emes, it's not so crazy to explain the pasuk in this very way. Kasha yarim Moshe, when Moshe lifted his hand to simon the Gavar Yisrael, it was a simon. It was a sign that the Gavar Yisrael, that Bnei Yisrael being strong, Bnei Yisrael being strong in their amuna. Shal yidei shegavar Yisrael harim Moshe es yada. Because Bnei Yisrael was stronger than Amuna, Moshe Rabbeinu was able, he was enabled to lift up his hands. And so, of course, the answer then is the question that the Sfas Emes asked. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu ever put his hands down? The answer is he wouldn't put his hands down if it was all up to him in order to accomplish the victory in the war. But if Moshe Rabbeinu is just a reflection of Klal Yisrael's Amuna, so his hands went down automatically. So let's try to understand a little bit more. What type of Amuna were we battling when we fought with Amalek? What was the existential crisis and the existential war that we were engaged in with this battle in Amalek? Let's try to understand this a little bit more, sharpen our clarity regarding this, so it will shed light, I believe, on the battle of Amalek and on, also on the Purim story. There is a beautiful piece by Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik asks the following question. He says, what makes humans, mankind, unique? What makes us unique and distinct from all other brios, all other creations in the world? So the Rav says there are two various answers to this question. The first answer is the Rambam and those who go along that line of reasoning. And the Rambam says what makes Bnei Yisrael, what makes man kind of unique, is his ability to be rational, his ability to think, to process the world around him, and to discern between different things, where God is and where God isn't. And that's what makes man unique. It's our ability to really think. It's our higher level of thinking process, and that's what is special about people. The Rav has a problem with this approach. His problem to this approach is really this, the next source on the sheet, which is the Gemara, very famous Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Peches Amud Aleph. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says the following: Bishar shektim yisal nasa l'nishma yatsa baskal v'amra lahem yigila livnei raz zeh shamalachei asharos mishtam shimbo. This very famous concept that when we stood at Har Sinai and Hashem offered us the Torah, our response was nasa v'nishma. Nasa v'nishma means we will do first and foremost. And then afterwards, after we've accomplished, we've done, then we'll learn about it, we'll understand it, and then we'll process it, and we'll get it. But first and foremost, Hashem, you say, jump, we jump. And this response, says the Gemara, was an unbelievable response. This response is something that's so special and so lofty that only the Malachi Ashari, says the Gemara, usually use this kind of a language that Hashem says, do, and we do without question. This is something that's considered to be an ideal. So says the Rav, well, let's understand this. Let's think about this for a second. If this is an ideal response, what does this response really represent? Klal Yisrael is standing at Har Sinai, and Hashem says, do you want our Torah? Well, the logical answer would have been, well, okay, let's see. Is this something that I can relate to? Is this something that I can manage? Is this something that I can really commit to doing? Let me hear what's in it. And then I can actually assess and say, yes, I have full faith, Hashem, that this I can do. I can accomplish this. I'm in. That would have been the logical response. It would have been made sense. But that is not what we responded. We responded, Nasa v'nishma means we'll just do. I don't know what's in it yet. And I don't even care. Hashem, you're telling us to do it. We'll do it. We're mevatel our das. We totally erase the logical part of us. And we said, we will do automatically. So says the Rav, if this is really indeed such a high, praiseworthy response, then how is it possible? Rav felt that it was just really almost a stira. It was a contradiction to say, you know what's most unique about man? God created man to be very, very special, very unique. And that uniqueness is his ability to be rational, his ability to process, his ability to think about things. And then respond accordingly and appropriately. That's what makes man unique. And here we at Har Sinai, and basically what the Gemara is saying is that Hashem is so proud of us that we're mevatel that which made us unique. We totally negated our special quality. So we became like animals, really? Is that what's so special? We became like animals in the sense that we just do without thinking. That's what our uniqueness is. And this is something so praiseworthy. So this is something so amazingly special. So the Rav says, I have a hard time then saying that the uniqueness ultimately of man is that he can process, that he's logical, that he thinks, that we have such an amazing prefrontal cortex that we can work through so many difficult problems and come up with solutions. Although that is special, but does that get to the heart and to the essence of what it means to be human? So says the Rav, I don't think so. This Gemara to me is too much of a stira to that concept. So therefore, said the Rav, we have to go with the Baalei HaMesorah of Kabbalah, that the Kabbalists teach us that man is unique in a different, totally different way. And that is man has what he calls two different ritzonos, two different willpowers, two different sources of energy in ourselves. And those two ritzonos is the Ratzon Elyon and the Ratzon Tachton. So let's understand what this is. The Rav explains that the Ratzon Tachton is what we were describing a minute ago. The Ratzon Tachton is the Ratzon that is logical, that thinks, that is inquisitive and tries to understand and come up with solutions. That's the Ratzon Tachton. It's very deliberate. The Ratzon Elyon is a higher level of Ratzon, of will, of what drives us. Says the Rav, the Ratzon Elyon is powerful. It's dynamic. It bursts forth. It does because it feels right. It does because we have an intuitive sense that this is the right thing to do. And that is not something to belittle, like, oh, the person's not really thinking. He says, the Rav, that's a higher level of Das, so to speak. It's called the Ratzon Elyon. Let's look at the beautiful words of the Rav himself. Here we have Reflections of the Rav. It's in Volume 1, pages 91 through 92. We'll start with the second sentence here. The intellect is inherently wary, slow moving, computing in terms of loss and profit. To decide by reason is essentially to balance credits and debits, to weigh alternatives, and to measure consequences. This analysis is painstaking and time-consuming. The Ratzon Elyon, however, is intuitive, dynamic, aggressive, and passionate. It bursts forth with fervor and emotional intensity. Its insights and higher affirmations are inspired with the breath of divinity, which is in every man, which every man is endowed. That says the Rav, Ratzon Elyon comes from that innate divinity, our neshama that's inside of us, and we tap into that, and we just have this clarity that we can't always even explain, but it says to us, we're on the right path. We're making good decisions. We're driving to the right place. The Kabbalist taught, says the Rav, that the Ratzon Elyon belongs to the Keter Elyon, the crown, the highest sphera. A crown rests on top of the head, on top of the brain. The brain is underneath. The brain is the seed of Chachma, Bina, and Das, which are various levels of mental endowment, which constitute the Ratzon Tachton, the lower will. The crown, however, towers over the intellect. It is not governed or motivated by that which is underneath. It starts with an awareness of the cognitive world, but leaps beyond it. It wills because it wills, defying any attempt to explain the antecedents of the will. It is the real I in the human personality. Such a powerful phraseology, such powerful language, so beautiful. This kesa, this crown, sits on top of the head, and it really taps into what the Rav understood based on the Kabbalist is the real I, the real essence of a person, the neshama that connects directly to Hashem and wills because it wills. It knows because it knows. It can't always even explain. And says the Rav, so many great decisions have been made because of Ratzon Elyon moments. Ratzon Tachton Emotz makes us doubt ourselves, make us sometimes, we're very deliberate. We have to think it through. We have to know every consequence. And therefore, it's very slow. It doesn't always allow us to move forward in bold ways. The Ratzon Elyon is a Ratzon that accomplishes great things. For example, I just would want to share a beautiful story. The Panovitcher Rav, which maybe some people are familiar with, he was a great, great Rav in Europe from Panovitch. He built yeshivos, he built orphanages, and he created an entire network to help Klal Yisrael in Europe. He happened to be on a trip to Eretz Yisrael at the time, at the outbreak of World War II, and he got stuck in Eretz Yisrael. He wasn't able to make it back to Europe, and he lost everything. He lost his yeshivos. He lost his Talmidim, he lost his orphanages, he lost all those students, he lost his family. And there he was stuck in Eretz Yisrael. This is in the early 1940s. And the Panovitcher Rav was standing on a hilltop of barren land in Bnei Brak. And he was talking to another Rav, Rav Zsolti. And he said to him, you see that hilltop over there? He pointed, this is in the early 1940s. In the height of the war with Germany, with the Nazi Yimach Shemam. And the Panovitcher Rav pointed to that hilltop and he said, on that hilltop, I'm going to build a huge yeshiva. We're going to rebuild Panovitch. And there are going to be hundreds upon hundreds of Talmidim studying and learning Torah from that very hilltop. And people looked at him, he would share this idea with people, and people looked at him as if he's crazy. It's 1940. Rommel, the desert fox, was at the footstep of Egypt. And everyone in Eretz Yisrael living at that time was very, very low. Their spirits were very low, despondent, as they saw this crushing onslaught coming their way. And people weren't envisioning a bright future. People weren't building for the future. And here's the Panovitcher Rav saying, on that hilltop, I am going to break ground for the next yeshiva. That is a Ratzon Elyon moment. It defies logic. It makes no sense. But the Panovich Rav said it with such clarity. People told him, you know, you're dreaming. And the Panovich Rav answered, I am dreaming, but my eyes are open. Clarity, and yet defies all logic. That's a Ratzon Elyon moment. Says the Rav, that's really what sustained us all these years. It's really unbelievable to think with all the persecution, and now in America, with the culture that's constantly sucking us in to other lifestyles, the fact that we're able to cling so steadfastly to our Torah, our mitzvos, and our beliefs, the fact that we're still here, a community of Shomrei Torah, really defies logic. And that kind of Amkshe Oref moment that we're so stubborn and we stick with it, we continue to do moments as a Rav, that's really an outgrowth of Ratzon Elyon. It's an outgrowth of the neshama that's within inside of us that connects to the Ravona Shalom. So this is such an important yesod to know that logic, while very, very critical and important, all of Gemara and Halacha is based on logic. And we very much praise and very much believe in the value of logic and discernment. At the same time, we have to recognize there is another Ratzon. It's a Ratzon that is powerful, that's clear, and that comes from deep within a sense of right and wrong and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. So now let's take this idea of the Ratzon. I think it sheds light on the following beautiful, beautiful idea that we're going to see from Bnei Yisachar. But just before that, I also want to mention, perhaps with this idea of the Ratzon Elyon, we can understand we can answer another question. And that is, we know that the Luchos Rishonis that we were given, the first set of Luchos that were handed to us at Har Sinai, those were broken. And only the second set of Luchos that we got later are the ones that we ultimately were able to hold on to. And says the Medrash, interestingly, Haluchos Rishonos al shenasnu bepumbi, because the Luchos Rishonos were given with such great fanfare and so publicly, shaltavim ayin hara. So therefore, this kind of evil eye rested upon it in Ishtabru. They were kind of destined to be broken because they were given in such a public fashion. But since, says the Medrash, the second set of Luchos were given bitzinius, were given quietly, in modesty. So those Luchos endured and they lasted. And the obvious question is that many ask, well, if it's so clear that the Luchos, which were given with great pomp and circumstance, were be destined to be destroyed because of the pomp and circumstance, because it was given in such a fantastical kind of a framework. So then why do it? Why not just skip and have a quiet celebration, Klal Yisrael receiving the Torah in a very tzenua way that would last? And I think the answer based on the Rav would be as follows, because we needed a Ratzon Elyon moment. We needed something so powerful, so overwhelming, that allowed us and helped us to tap into that innate kind of knowledge of Hashem that's inside of us, but might have been laying dormant until now through the Yetzias Mitzrayim experience. We were trying to tap into that Ratzon Elyon. We were tapping into that sense and that feeling that we just know Hashem, He is here, He is with us, He's inside of us. And we can always rely on that, even when things are not so clear. We can always rely on that Ratzon Elyon that drives us forward. That was only possible to tap into when we had this unbelievable experience of revelation of Hashem. And so while the Luchos itself may not have endured, they may not have lasted, but the experience of Har Sinai the first time around absolutely endured. The impression and the impact stayed with us, that we were able to feel and to sense and to experience a Ratzon Elyon. And then afterwards, we can build on that with something that's more tsanua, something that's more appropriate for the time, so that we can really connect to the Torah in an ongoing way. But the Ratzon Elyon experience was the first Luchos. So now with this, let's look at this Bnei Yisachar. Bnei Yisachar gives us a fascinating medrash. The medrash says, Zachor Sashira Salakha Amalek. We have to remember, this is what we read, to remember Zechiras Amalek. And the Medrash says, when we are supposed to remember this battle with Amalek, the Medrash says the following. It's brought down in the Yalkut. Mashal Amalek. The Medrash offers a mashal, a parable. There was a king Shahailo Pardes, and he had a beautifully beautiful orchard with gorgeous fruit. Vehemid Kelev Shotel Pisco, and it had a very, very violent Kelev, right? A crazy dog would watch this Pardes, this field, so that no one can enter the field, right? You get your watchdog, and that watchdog will protect the field. Vahalach Avo Shamelech Lignov Mina Pardes, and a beloved confidant, someone very close to the king, really just had a tiver for one of the fruits. And instead of asking the king, he felt like there's no way I could ask the king. He wanted to go in and just grab a fruit. So I'm just going to sneak in there. I'm going to sneak in and grab a fruit, says the Medrash. V'karak elevit begadav. So the watchdog is on guard. He senses this person sneaking into the pardes, runs up and starts barking and snapping and rips some of the clothes of this ganav. This actually is Ganav, who is a friend of the Melech. And the friend tears out, but not without first getting bitten and torn up by the Kelev. Kol pam shrotza melech lahazkir lo ma'aseh harasha asah shehalach lignov min bapardes. So now whenever the king wanted to mention to this friend of his, wanted to remind him of his misdeed, that he went and tried to steal a fruit from the king's pardes, the king would say to him, Omer lo ha-melech, Kama Kelev Shothuza, that crazy dog, what a crazy dog that I have in my field. Shikar Begadacha, that ripped your clothes. Like, why did my dog rip your clothes? Crazy. Kach Yisrael, Amr Hashem. Amr. So Kach Yisrael, Amr Hashem, Hayesh Hashem Bikubino Ayim. So says the Medrash, the same thing is true with Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they had Kriyas Yamsuf, they went into the midbar, and Hashem gave us food tape. We had the man. If you're reading through the story, that's how the story plays out in Chumash. And then towards the end of Parshas Bishalach, after we've gotten the man, Hashem has taken such good care of us, we say, Hayesh b'kibeinu imayin, is Hashem really amongst us? We question whether Hashem was there, present in our lives. After all that Hashem has done, he's this king that loves us. And we question, Hayesh Hashem b'kibeinu ma'ayin, is Hashem really with us? We're like that ohev that tried to steal into the garden and steal some fruit, right? And why do we not have to steal? Hashem's right there. Just ask him. Ask the king. Lo ratza Moshe Rabbeinu l'vashon l'hazkeh lehem ma'aseh hara hazu shelo levayishem. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to remind Klal Yisrael of this terrible misdeed we had, this lapse in our emunah. We said, is Hashem with us or not? So Varmalahem, so instead Moshe Rabbeinu would say, Zachor es asher lechsach lecha Amalek ha-kelev ha-omer al ha-pesach. Do you remember what Amalek did to us? That crazy dog that attacked us. Like, why did this crazy dog attack us? Right? It's a crazy dog, Amalek. That's what the Medrash says. Ad kan lashon ha-medrash. Such a fascinating Medrash. It's an interesting parable. What's going on? What is the Medrash trying to teach us? Why is this the mashal that the Rabbanim give when it comes to the mitzvah Mechias Amalek? HaMedrash hazeh omer darshuni v'chiyu. The Medrash says you need to ask questions. That's what the Medrash says. You got to understand me. So we're not going to answer all the questions for just short on time, but Aleph. Yesh lizboni, ma hukshu lalut shuhusruch l'mashal. What was bothering Chazal about the psukim of Zohar, about this command to remember Amalek, right? Never forget. This is something that resonates with us. So what's bothersome about Zohar? We should remember Amalek, what Amalek did to us. This is an important mitzvah. What bothered Chazal that they would have to give a medrash, that they'd have to give a mashal, I'm sorry, Beis. Kfiya Nira, the second question is, Kfiya Nira mashal. It seems, according to the mashal, Ikar mitzvah lizkor es asher hiksafnu, the amor hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu, that the Ikar mitzvah is really that we should remember our lapse in Amunah. The Ikar mitzvah is that we should remind ourselves that we question whether Hashem is really with us. We question whether Hashem is really taking care of us. Is Hashem with us? And the Amalek aspect is just to remind us that we had that question. That's what the mashal seems to imply. The king didn't want to tell the person that he loved, that you still tried to steal fruit from me. So instead, the king hinted at it by saying, what about that crazy dog that ripped your clothes? And so Moshe Rabbeinu hints at us, what about that crazy Amalek that attacked us? But really what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying is remember that you can't have a lapse in Amunah. And so the mitzvah, there should be directly to remember that we question our Amunah. And yet, we know the mitzvah actually is to remember what Amalek did. So which one is it? The Medrash seems to distort what the mitzvah is. The mitzvah to remember Amalek, or is the mitzvah to remember a lack of Amunah? And Amalek is just like the Hechi Timsa, it's just the hint. It's just like the trigger to remember what we ourselves were lacking. So that's an important question. So let's see what he answers. And he has an unbelievably so, which connects to Michiel Sambalik, and hopefully we'll be able to connect it to Purim and wind off with a nice Purim message. So just skipping down to the second paragraph, I'm sorry, I'm just going here. So he says, it seems to me, and I've written about this many times, and he says, Israel Hakira Basic Amuna, that a person shouldn't try too much rely on logic when it comes to Amuna. But rather the Ikar Avoda, the main task, our main endeavor is to connect to our sense of Amuna that is Yerusha, that is a Kabbalah, that is part of our history and part of our heritage that we have from our forefathers. This is what the Pasuk means. Hashem promised Avram Avinu. Ki yedativ, says Hashem, I know, lemana sheyitzav es banav es beso achrav. Hashem said by Avram Avinu that I know that Avram Avinu will command his children after him to follow in the ways of Hashem. V'shamru derech Hashem. And says the B'nai Yisaskar, perish yedativ. The explanation, what does it mean, yedativ, I know? Says B'nai Yisaskar, nosati bo b'chinas ha-da'as. I inserted within Avram Avinu the concept and the bechina of das, of discernment, of knowledge of Hashem. Umimenu, and from Avram Avinu, it will flow, yumshach lezara achar, will flow to his zera, to his children after him, b'tzivui, just as a command. Believe in Hashem. Hashem was discovered by Avram Avinu, and now you, the children, have it as Yerusha. And that the knowledge and the awareness of Hashem is really something that comes to us at this point naturally. That's what I think the Rav would call the Ratzon Elyon. It's tapping into that sense of Amuna and Hashem that comes naturally to us because we're connected to Hashem and our neshamas. Skip down to the next paragraph. The Bnei Yisaskar quotes the Riyadids who had his own experience, Shira'a, that he saw Gzer Sfarad during the times, of the persecution in Spain. Shekol Osan HaChokrim Sh'amdu Amech Karamuna Mitzad HaChikiras HaSeichel HaNoshi, that all the people, all the Jewish people, that were the great brains, the great philosophers, that understood and had a belief in Hashem based on proofs and based on logic. They were the first peoples to give up their belief in Hashem and to convert to Christianity on that day of tremendous terror. When someone held a sword to their head and said, will you convert? Or do you want to stay a Jew? They were the ones to convert. But people who were more simple, people who didn't have such great chachma, that just experienced Hashem in their lives as a feeling, as an emotion, as a Kabbalah, as Yerusha from the others. They were Mekadeshim Shamayim. They stuck with Hashem no matter what. Says Ibn Yisaskar, because something that we come to as an experience based on our logic, then our logic at some point is always flawed. There's an end to what our logic can come up with. There is a limitation to our das. And therefore, ultimately, if we're pushed hard enough, our das can say, I'm not sure. I don't know 100%. And that can lead a person to chalila being hamir das, being over, giving up on their knowledge of Hashem. But if the emunah is rooted in something deeper, it's rooted in that ratzon elyon, it's rooted in that derech hateva, that kabbalah that we got from Avram Avinu, that is part of our spiritual DNA, it's just who we are. I believe in Hashem because I believe in Hashem. So then it's not logical and it's not susceptible to any questioning. You can't disprove what I'm not thinking about trying to prove anyways. It's something that is so deep. And that's what the B'nai Sasko, we won't do inside, but that's what he describes. That when we can tap into this Ratzon Elyon, that feeling, the Hargasha, that Hashem is here, Hashem Bikir Beinu, Hashem is with us, and I don't have to prove it, then that's something that's not subject to being nullified. It's very deep and powerful. That's what Amalek ultimately represented. Amalek, as we know, represented doubt. Amalek represented cold, hard calculation. Can you prove it to me? As many of the Mefarshim explain, Asher Karcha Baderech, when the Pasuk says that Amalek Karcha Baderech, they happened upon the way to meet us, that was the meet of Amalek. They were that meet of Karcha, of just happenstance, of maybe it's an occurrence. Maybe everything that we saw and everything we believed in just was upon, maybe it's God, and maybe not. Maybe it was just, it was just luck. Maybe everything fell into a place just by happenstance, but it doesn't represent a higher power. So the fact that the sea split, who knows? Why do we don't know 100% that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu that was actually guiding our history? As many of the Mefarshim point out, the Rambam points out, Rav Volbl talks about this at great length. If you look at the Psukim B'Parshas B'Shalach, the splitting of the sea, it talks about this wind that was going all night long. What's this wind that was going all night long? And says the Ramban, because in every occurrence in life, there's always an out to say, maybe it was natural. And here the strong wind is pushing the sea all night long. And perhaps this crazy wind that came out of nowhere split the sea. And it was not so miraculous as we thought. There's always that out. And Amalek represents that koach of maybe not. Maybe it's not Hashem. Prove it. And so therefore, this fits right back to where we started with the Svas Emes. That when Amalek came to us, Amalek questioned our Amuna. Maybe it's not Hashem. And we weakened in our Amuna. Is it really up to Hashem or is it up to us? Who's battling Amalek right now? Is it us battling Amalek, or are we just relying at Hashem that although we're doing our Ishtadlus, but really the victory is coming from Hashem? That was the question. So says Bnei Zoschar, that's what's going on here with this medrash. This medrash was bothered by the following. It says, Zachor is Hashem Salah Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to us. Zachor, says the Bnei Zoschar, he felt that grammatically it could have said Zichor Hashem Salah Amalek with a shva. Zichor would be a connected word. Remember what Amalek did. But when you do Zachor with a kamat, then Zachor means remember, to remember for the sake of remembering. It sounds like there's something else we need to remember in addition to Amalek. Explains Bnei Yisaskar, that was what was bothering Chazal. Chazal understood from this, that we were supposed to remember our lapse in Emunah, which is what triggered Amalek. Yes, the mitzvah is to remember Amalek. But the mitzvah is to remember Amalek and also to additionally remember what triggered Amalek to show up. That's the Zachor S. You don't need the S and you don't need a Zachor with the commas. But says the Medrash based on that there's something else going on here. What triggered Amalek is that we ourselves started tapping into the Koach of Amalek that said we have to prove it. Right? Hashem did all these miracles for us, but yet, Im kol zeh hayesh Hashem b'kibeinu am'ayim. Is Hashem still with us? Is Hashem still being mashkiach on us at every moment? Maybe there is this God and he did some tremendous miracles before, but perhaps now, we're just little people and Hashem is not here for us all the time. Why do we matter so much? That's a koach of Amalek. I need to prove, Hashem, you have to prove it again to me. Prove it again to me that you believe, that you're here for me, that you love me, that you care about me, that you're taking care of me. Prove it again. And if not, so maybe I don't know it's true. Maybe I don't know it's true. And that's the Amunah, what we had to tap into. The Yad of Shemosha raised when we were able to tap into that sense and say, no, we have to fight that urge of Amalek that doubts and that questions and has to be proven over and over again through Chakiros, through manipulations within our minds. We have to believe for the sense of believing. This is indeed the Purim story. The Purim story is one where we did not see Hashem's hands. It's Nistar. Purim is our experience through Galus, where Hashem's hand is not revealed. It's not Nisim Kaluyim, where it's obvious, where you can prove, see Hashem's in charge. It's very much hidden. And the whole point is that we're supposed to kind of tap into this Emuna. Again, Haman is Amalek. Haman is that Koach that says, Hipil Pur, everything is a coincidence. And we're just going to throw some dice, and that will guide us what we're supposed to do, because everything's coincidence. Everything is just what we make up. There's no God in the picture. And the truth is, we couldn't see God in the picture. Every step of the way, every moment, there was no revelation of God's hand. But the amuna that we have is that Hashem is present. Hashem bikir beinu, even when we don't always see his presence. And therefore, the story of Purim is one where it's not about zichuyos. It's not about us doing X amount and therefore Hashem responds doing Y. It's about pure and simple Ratzon Elyon. We're the children of Hashem. Hashem loves us absolutely, and therefore Hashem does for us. And we believe in Hashem absolutely, even if we don't necessarily deserve it. The Sfas Emes points out in this last verse, Shua Soma Yisrael Anasach V'sikva Som B'chol Dor V'odor, that the Yeshua of the Purim time is forever. It's enduring. It's always. Because Purim really is the constant experience of us in Galus. Ki HaTeshua B'Purim Hayil Doros Olam, says the Sfas Emes. Kishmosh HaGzera Hayil HaHashmin Kol Yehudim, just like the Gezerah was to destroy all the Jewish people, Memela Gamanes Hayil Kol HaDoros. So too, automatically, the miracle was for all times, because if we would have been destroyed then, we wouldn't exist today. So in that sense, the miracle for all times, but it's more than that. Varekim Kol Zera Yisrael HaKol Yedein Yisazeb, Isa. The Gemara Megillah says that in Shemayim, Hashem was masking with the decree of Haman. Haman said, I wanted to destroy the Jewish people. I hate them. And Hashem said, they deserve destruction because we were so weak at that time in our observance and in belief in Hashem. We did things just by rote, but we had no real deep connection. That's why we can go to a surah of Achashveiros and have a great old time, right? Because, you know, what does Hashem expect of us and demand of us? We weren't present thinking about that. So Hashem said, yes, Haman, you have reshus, says the Gemara. Haman had reshus to destroy us. But afal pikein, that's the godless of Purim. V'akadosh baruch hu asazeh anez b'liv zechus Yisrael. Hashem did this miracle without any particular zechuyos, without any merit on our hand. Merits are all logical. I do X amount and therefore I deserve to get. That's all logical. This is not a logic. Purim is a time for us to realize we're Hashem's nation. Hashem loves us and we always just rely on Hashem. And therefore Hashem, we need you to save us because you're our Father in heaven and we have nobody else. And it's you we always, always rely on. We have that Ratzon Elyon that says defies logic. It doesn't make sense. We may not deserve it at this moment, but we rely on you, Hashem, anyways. And then Hashem responds in kind as the loving Father, and he helps us out. That is the secret, says Rav Huttner in many, many of his essays on Purim, of why there's this unique and strange halacha that we drink ad lo yada, that we actually get drunk. Why would we want to be mevatel our das? Why would we want to make things murky and unclear? And the answer is because ultimately Purim was about a time period where things were murky and unclear. And our logic did not dictate a very positive outcome to this story, to the story of Purim. Logic did not dictate that things would work out well. But yet, Afal Pikim, we're able to say with that Ratzon Elyon that our neshama feels Hashem is here. Our neshama believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know that our relationship to Hashem defies logic. It's we are his holy nation and we are his children and we rely on Hashem to take care of us. And Hashem responds in kind with that love and he takes care of us. And so therefore, mevatel our das, and we say we don't understand what all the thing is all about. That's our experience in Galus. We don't understand. We can look at our lives right now and say, oh, where is this leading? Where is this heading to? And Purim is that time where we can say, you know, Afal Pikein, even though we don't understand, we believe Emunah Shalem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in our lives, that he's taking care of everything, and he's guiding this to a positive place, although we don't get it, but we believe it absolutely. And with that, we're able to be Zochet to Yeshua. We're able to have that sense of Yeshua, because the Yeshua is there whether we see it or not. The Yeshua is there whether we see it or not. So Halavai, these are some of the messages of Purim. Purim is a das, it's a Ratzon Elyon time. Purim is an amuna that's not rooted in understanding and in logic and in proofs. Purim is a time of believing in hargasha and feeling and connecting to a deeper level of an experience of Hashem. And so hopefully this Purim, with all the craziness that's going on in this world, we can tap into that koach and we can really draw strength because there is so much strength there. I want to wish everyone a beautiful, beautiful Yom Tov coming up. Thank you for joining us today and spending a few minutes of learning Torah together.